Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the consequences of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Chris Kington Barker is hosting the program today while still practicing recommendations for safe physical distancing. Her guests are joining her on Zoom. We encourage you to participate by sending us your questions or comments by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them in at 805-549-8855. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Rachel. A research article published in June 2020 in Brain Science's Psychological and Behavioral Impact of COVID-19 in Autism Spectrum Disorder, an online parent survey, concluded that ongoing COVID-19 emergency has resulted in a challenging period for most autism spectrum disorder individuals and their families, with increased difficulties in managing daily activities in at least one in every three children presenting with more frequent and more intense behavior problems. Children with behavior problems predating the COVID-19 outbreak were found to be at particular risk to present more intense and more frequent disruptive behavior. Even though ASD children were receiving different types of support, also requiring specialists or emergency interventions in a relatively low portion of the cases, a number needed emerged that included receiving more healthcare support, especially from in-home services, as well as interventions to tackle potentially disruptive quarantine. Today's show and featured guests will focus on this topic with local expertise and resources. And I'll be talking with Casey Roberts, Executive Director for the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, member of SLO CELPA Community Advisory Committee, and a parent of a child with autism. April Llewellyn, Board Chair, Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, and VP at Pathpoint, and Rebecca Kosnick, who's a parent and chair of the Community Advisory Committee with CELPA. We want you to be part of today's discussion, and you can participate by calling your questions or comments into 805-549-8855 or email us at voices@kcbx. And thank you very much for joining me, all three of you, Casey, April, and Rebecca. I appreciate you being here. So let's go ahead and start, if we can, by introducing your organizations and the agencies and a little bit about the resources that you bring to the community. If we can start with Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, what is the center and what kind of resources do you bring?
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having us on the show. The Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center was formed in 2007, and we provide support for individuals from early diagnosis and intervention through pre-vocational and vocational training to transitional services and beyond. We offer parent network groups. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, we did game nights, dances. We hosted gymnastics, various events that promote inclusivity and community access through other resources and other agencies such as Pathpoint, UCP SLO, and a few of our other partners in the community. And we are trying to adapt and overcome in the pandemic and offer as many services as we can virtually, and we look forward to hopefully starting to have some more in-person events again in the near future.
Does the agency have a physical place, or do you provide your coordination of the different resources in various areas of the community?
We provide in various areas of the community. We don't have an office. We go into different other local businesses, such as our gymnastics, to be held at the Gymnastics Center, and we partner with other agencies within the community to use their buildings, per se. We don't have an actual place for parents, caregivers, or those with ASD to come to us.
Okay, great. And then April, if you could talk a little bit about Pathpoint.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having us on today. PathPoint's an agency that has been in operation about 56 years.
Wow.
We serve about 3,000 individuals annually, and we're have a diverse geographic footprint. We have five different divisions. The North Central Coast Division, of which I'm the vice president of, goes from San Miguel down to Lompoc and over to Solvang, so you can kind of see the area there. Then we have locations in Kern County, Ventura County, Los Angeles County, and Santa Barbara. So we cover a lot of the southern area of California. Our mission is to partner with people so that they can have the opportunity to live the life they choose. And we work every day with individuals, even during COVID, to help support them in that. We have three main areas of focus. We have employment, which is integrated work where we have individuals who want to work. We partner with employers and find the employment opportunities that meet the individual's needs and place them and coach them and make them successful. The second area is residential. So we assist individuals who live independently with independent living skills. We also do supported residential services. So we'll teach life skills and do that type of activity with them. And then we had at one point day programs, physical day programs. And due to COVID, we've had to close our facilities and immediately move over to alternative remote services for those individuals that cannot come into the facility for day program activities. We now are providing those remotely or in person. We go out and take them on trips individually, or we'll take them for walks or do whatever we can through their window, wave at them, and really try to engage them in activities.
And the individuals that you're serving are individuals who are on the spectrum?
Some of them are on the spectrum. We deal with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So we have a majority of our individuals are on the spectrum, but we also have Down's multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy. So it really, depending on what their disability is, we've had some people that have suffered accidents that have,
brain injuries.
All sorts of different, unfortunate situations that have put them in a place where we can provide them services and make the most of their life.
Yeah. And what age ranges?
So we have started 16. We have a program for 16 to 18 year olds for youth employment to get their resume built up and give them the job skills so that when they become an adult, if you will, they can go out and get a job and are prepared for employment just like any other typical high school student. So we go 16 until end of life.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for that. And Rebecca, I want to get to you because you're a parent of a child with who's on the spectrum. And you're also the chair of the Community Advisory Committee. Can you give me a little bit of information about those two things?
Yeah, so I have been on the CAC committee through SELPA for, I believe this is my third year, first year as a chair. SELPA overlooks all the IEPs, which is the Individualized Education Program for students. So that is any services ranging from speech, occupational therapy, extra in-class support. And I am part of CAC is made up mostly of parents. There's quite a few educators in there too. We have representatives from all over San Luis Obispo County school districts. And it's just a good way for us to try to figure out parent outreach, parent education, and just getting people, getting a parent perspective to kind of help with things that might get overlooked. And go ahead.
Go ahead.
And then I have a 10-year-old daughter that's on the autism spectrum. She has an overall developmental delay and severe speech apraxia. And so that's how I got involved with all this. It's been a great but emotional ride.
I'll bet it has. With SELPA, you mentioned that that is an organization that interacts with the schools. Did you get involved with them in terms of interacting with your child before she was in kindergarten?
No, I did not. Our special education director for our district, I was in contact with her just through some advocating that I was doing for my daughter. And she asked me to become a part of it and represent Atascadero Unified School District.
How important is it for parents to advocate for their kids in order to get services?
You know, advocating, I think, sometimes gets a little bit of a bad rap. In my opinion, advocating is more bringing attention to what needs your child is not getting, that might be getting overlooked by the school, definitely not intentionally. But as parents, we know our children better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so we know what their needs are. And I do have to say, I've been extremely lucky with our district. They've always gone above and beyond for me and for my daughter.
At what point, if you don't mind me asking, at what point were you realizing that there was a special needs that your daughter had that she was not receiving or that you needed some more support with?
You know, it started when she was about a year old. We have a neighbor that's the same age as her. And he was talking a lot. And so up until then, she had met every milestone within normal limits. So I took her to the doctor, and the doctor was great. She's a local pediatrician here. And she told me, she goes, you know what, let's wait till she's a year and a half and see where she's at. Maybe she'll have more words by then. So we did that. And she goes, you know, I'll refer you to Tri-Counties. We did hearing and vision tests to make sure that was all normal. So referred us to Tri-Counties, and they started providing the early intervention services. And I mean, it was great. It was just so fortunate to have a proactive pediatrician.
Yeah, I think a pediatrician is key, isn't it, for children?
For sure. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to pose a question to all of you is, you know, are children, teenagers, and adults with autism more likely, do you think, to be impacted by circumstances like we're going through right now with COVID? In the introduction, I was reading about the survey that they had done where they'd said 1 in 3 of them is severely impacted. We know everybody is impacted by it. What kinds of things are you seeing that may be extraordinary for individuals, for children that are on the spectrum?
So, Chris, this is Casey. I have noticed that a lot of those who have ASD thrive on a routine and a sense of normalcy that we as parents and caregivers and support personnel work around the clock to dial in and fine-tune to make sure that they're getting the most out of every experience. And that includes education. We work with their teachers, their principals, their special education directors, and now that entire routine has been upended. I saw this meme, and it was so perfect. They went to school one day in March, came home, and never went back. And that just completely turns a typical developing child's world upside down. But for someone who requires that routine in order to be successful, it is very difficult, and it leads to increased behavioral issues. It leads to depression. It leads to a discord in the home, which it just is very, very difficult to try and navigate to make sure that your child can continue to be successful and meet all of their needs while their goals are changing because there's only so much they can do. How can they address a social skills goal or a goal that requires you to be in person when you're talking to them over a computer? You can't read them the same. You can't read my child's body language via Zoom the way you can when he's sitting in front of you. You're not receiving those cues, and he's not receiving the same cues that you are giving him either, which is, you know, very detrimental to his education and his well-being.
Yeah, is there anything that can assist with that?
We have been fortunate enough to hire a tutor. So there is someone with him that is able to help him regulate himself. But there's a lot of families that don't have that luxury, and I know it is a luxury. That helps him. They're, you know, they set up spaces that are quiet. But if you have other siblings in the house that are also doing Zoom, you have a distractive parent or caregiver or a noisy four-year-old running around, and that's distracting to any child, let alone someone with ASD. So, you know, trying to provide some sense of normalcy, a dedicated space, a dedicated schedule, even though it's kind of loosey-goosey, does help. Providing them time to get away from the screen, be outside and be active and burn off some of that frustration that they are all feeling is another great way to combat it. And being in constant communication with the educators, this is how he's doing today. This is how she's doing today. This is what they're struggling with. This is what's going well and this is what isn't. A constant line of communication with the teachers and the IEP staff are, you know, is instrumental also in creating a successful environment for them.
Oh my goodness. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener supported radio station. Coping with COVID-19 pandemic has been challenging for all families, but for families caring for children with disabilities, it can be especially challenging. According to the last U.S. Census report, one in every 26 American families reporting raising children with disability. Many of these families have been especially hard hit by the pandemic. Casey Roberts, Executive Director for the Central Coast Autism Center, member of SLO CELPA Community Advisory Committee, and parent of a child with autism, is with me today along with April Llewellyn, Board Chair, Central Coast Autism Center, and VP of PathPoint, and Rebecca Kosnick, Parenting Chair of the Community Advisory Committee with CELPA. Are you a parent of a child on the spectrum who's struggling to help adjust through this pandemic? You can add your question or comments to today's discussion by calling us at 805-549-8855, or you can email us at voices@kcbx.org. And I'm going to go over to you, Rebecca, too. How has it been for you with your daughter in terms of her learning through distance learning, through trying to focus, through having difficulty with speech and trying to accommodate and adapt to communicating through tele?
Yeah, so I think most kids on the spectrum and or any developmental delay have a really hard time learning through the computer. My daughter, in March when they closed the schools, we also lost our in-home behavioral services, and they come to our house 5 days a week for 2 hours a day after school. So she lost that for about 8 weeks. And that they come and they're working on everyday issues with her, you know, everyday chores and, you know, everything that she needs help with. They also do a little bit of academics with her. But so we just, you know, we lost everything. She's always been on a slow, steady grade of progress. You know, we've never seen any regression until March. And from March until the beginning of school year, it was, I mean, she could count to 100 and in March. And by the time school started again, she could barely recognize numbers past 10. So, and that's just nothing we've ever seen from her before. So it's really tough. You know, everybody's doing the best that they can, and you know, the teachers are doing what they can, and it's really tough to see the kids suffering as much as they have.
What do you hear, Casey, from parents and support groups? This is what you were describing and what Rebecca's talking about, something that is a common issue.
So we are hearing frustration from parents. They are seeking support. So we used to host our network groups, and we have been able to figure out a way to do one, and that's been a partnership with Parents Helping Parents out of San Luis Obispo. And parents just need a place to talk. They need a place to vent that they feel safe, and they feel like the person they're talking with understands what they're going through. You know, your neighbor may be able to sympathize with you, but that empathy piece is huge, so that you don't feel like you're alone. You're not able to go and, you know, do a lot of the things and have the interactions that you as an adult need, and now you're so focused on your child that it's just extremely overwhelming. Parents are overwhelmed. They are trying to find services. They're frustrated at the lack of consistency between districts. Some districts are having in-person services already for those with an IEP and those with special day classes. Some aren't. So they go and they speak to another parent, and they're like, oh, well, we're receiving our services, you know, at 50%. And this other parent is like, well, we're still on distance learning and struggling. So the lack of consistency across the board throughout just San Luis Obispo County is very frustrating for parents as well. They want support. They want resources. They want their in-home services back. They're trying to balance this new world while many of them are also still trying to work. As right this second, I am in my office on this radio show, and my son is having behavioral therapy down the hall in my conference room. That is sadly the new normal that is occurring around the country right now for parents like me. And then there's the parents that are home day in and day out who aren't getting a reprieve and aren't getting the respite they need. We do, a lot of those who are with tri-counties receive what's called respite, and it's a specific amount of hours that you can have a respite provider come in, and it's someone that sometimes has some training but is CPR certified and, you know, assists, gives you a break. And that has changed. You know, a lot of respite providers don't want to come into the home. For a while, it stopped completely if it was a provider that came from a company and not someone you knew. And they're not even getting that anymore. So parents are tired. Parents are frustrated. And it's creating a very explosive dynamic right now in those households.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder about parents who can't take their kids to a conference room at work with them and have to be in an office or in a work situation where they're providing, for instance, working in a grocery store or something, and their kid needs to be doing distance learning and the only person to supervise them is perhaps another sibling.
That does happen. It's another sibling or it's a grandparent.
Right.
You know, and that is the reality. And as a parent, you feel terrible. Which do you choose? Do you choose putting food on the table for your family and keeping a roof over the head? Or do you stay home and figure out distance learning? God forbid a grandparent or a sibling can't do it. Parents have had to stay on furlough from their jobs. And it's a terrible choice that no parent should ever have to make, but they are having to make it. And you know, we have a lot of grandparents that have stepped up that I've seen, aunts, uncles, daycares have completely revamped their program to offer their kindergartners the ability to do distance learning in daycare so their parents can go to work and they still receive education. This is affecting so many aspects of the community that it's absolutely unreal. It really is.
Are there any resources for individuals that are facing those kind of challenges?
There's not a lot at this point in time, unfortunately. Respite hours are still being offered. I know that in-home services have started back up, depending on what companies you work with. It really depends. I know that certain organizations are doing Zoom/in-home supportive services, but there really isn't a lot of resources. Everybody was hit so quickly with this that everybody scrambled to just maintain some kind of semblance of normalcy in their personal life, that now the community is starting to come together more and focus on what we can offer resources on a larger scale. What can we offer parents? What can we offer caregivers? What can we do to try and help them as a whole, besides just, you know, a group where they get to talk for an hour? What other tools can we give them? And that's something that is becoming more of a focus as we start to level out in this new normal that we're all in.
Thank you. Can any of you speak to how, you know, how this is affecting some of the kids in understanding and embracing universal health precautions? You know, what kind of impact that's having, of having to wash hands and not shake hands and not touch and wear masks? Is that a difficulty or a challenge?
Chris, this is April. Youth and adults on the spectrum may have sensory issues. And yeah. So wearing a mask is not always something that they can practice and get used to. They just can't do it. We have individuals that are working in stores that must wear a mask. And if they can't or won't, then they've lost their jobs. And like Casey said, they need that routine. They want to work. They want to be a part of the community. And it's a real struggle for many of our adults and youth in the community. And yeah, that's what we're seeing. It's many people on the spectrum are super happy with less touch.
Yeah.
Because their sensory, you know, and their sensitivity, this is perfect for them.
Right. And isolation is kind of cool,
yes,
for
and
some people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they struggle with why me? And
yeah,
we really have to reinforce it's not just you. Mm. It's everyone. And then, you know, just keep reinforcing that, and that repetitive reinforcement, they're now, after 8 months of this, are now starting to understand that it's not just them, it's everyone. So, and
can you talk about how parents, or, you know, even parents with adults who are on the spectrum, how can they explain this so that it can be understood? A pandemic, how can they explain the need for some of the precautions or wearing a mask? Is there something that they could do in order to help explain it, whether it's utilizing cartoons or drawings, or, you know, is there better techniques than just a statement?
Well, I think Rebecca said it best, that a parent knows their child and their adult child best. Reinforcement, and when we're talking about, Casey and Rebecca talking about outside services or outside individuals coming in to provide that for their children, as a typical child, hearing it from a teacher, you know, clean your room, from mom and dad are like, no, I'm not doing it. But clean your room from your teacher is like, oh my goodness, my teacher told me to clean my room, so I will. So that's where PathPoint steps in. And with our remote services, we do hand washing, we do how to wear a mask and how to make a cool mask. And so that reinforcement really helps the parents. And then what we try to do as well is we try to get out to where they're at and take them for walks and say, okay, let's practice wearing your mask and see everyone else is wearing their masks. And so I think that helps. That's where PathPoint can jump in there and at least help out with the adults. And Casey's right there. It's kind of an explosive environment now, because everyone is frustrated. And when you have an adult that's frustrated and they lash out, it's a little bit different than a child who's smaller. So, yeah, you know, adults on the spectrum living at home with their parents, they're suffering just as much. Right. And they want to come back into programs. They want to see their staff that they love and know. And the County Office of Health has really helped with that. And they're saying, yes, now you can start reopening. You can start doing more in-person type things. And Tri-County's Regional Center, who is the conduit for all services, if anyone needs services, they go to Tri-County's Regional Center and they reach out to providers and do authorizations for services. So with the agency, Tri-County's Regional Center and the SLO County Office of Public Health, we're now all starting to get on the same page with moving forward to getting to understanding the importance of providing in-person services for individuals in the DD population, the developmental disability kids and adults.
Thank you for that. And Rachel, I'm going to go over to you.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, a caller from Napomo with a 16-year-old son says they've been struggling. Rachel, he's essentially...
She's muted.
Oh. There we go. Can you hear me now?
We can.
Great, Chris. Thank you. So a caller from Napomo with a 16-year-old son says they've been struggling. He's essentially lost a team of people who are helping him, and they've been reduced to just his parents who have other children and responsibilities. And she says it's been really devastating for them to see their son regress so much and worries about the long-term effects. So she's wondering, do the guests have ideas about how to help their family?
I'll turn it over to you guys.
Hi, this is Casey. You know, especially in those remote areas such as Lompoc, it's even more difficult. My suggestion would be to try and find, I know that it's not in person, but try and find virtual face-to-face activities that they can do. There are peer buddies groups. There are other social skills groups that are held virtually so they can talk to someone. If they really are struggling, especially at such a crucial age like 16, I would heavily suggest speaking to someone, a therapist, a psychologist, and maybe getting them some outside help. I do know some therapists and psychologists that are offering in person, or they are talking via Zoom. Sometimes they just need someone else to talk to that is not the parent, that is not the teacher, that just is going to listen and let them say, yeah, this sucks, and agree with them. That would be, you know, a big suggestion, especially for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I would just jump in here. This is April, and say if the 16-year-old is, you know, excited about working or interested in working, Department of Rehabilitation is an avenue to check out. They have, like I said, Pathpoint has a student work experience that started at 16. They just have to be enrolled in school. Through Tri-Counties is also involved in that, but Department of Rehabilitation, they have employment opportunities to part-time to get those students ready to work. We provide services in Lompoc and Solvang and Napomo and all of those rural areas. We'll go to wherever they are. We also have remote services. So, and we've opened it up, even if you're not a authorized individual for Pathpoint services, we've opened it up for others to get in on our remote services. So we're doing arts and crafts, we're doing baking, they're doing, they made flan downstairs and we're singing, you know, Mexican songs and Hispanic cultural educational pieces this week. So it was kind of cool. So we're offering up our Zoom links to those individuals just to participate and connect with the community.
How would they get a hold of someone at Pathpoint if that was something that they wanted to at least reach out to see if that's a connection that might work?
Yeah, they can go to our website, which is very easy, www.pathpoint.com or .org, and go to the website just log on, and they can request services, and all of our contact information is there. If that individual called in and they have a contact information and are willing to share it, Casey through the Spectrum Center can give her resources as well. That's really what the Autism Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center does. They provide resources. So there are other avenues, and then they could probably connect with Rebecca as well and join a parent group and kind of network that way.
Okay, so if caller would like to call back and share that information, we'll have somebody call you. Thank you for that, both April and Casey. And we're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to hand it back to you, Rachel.
You're listening to KCBX Central Coast Public Radio, serving South Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. You're listening to Central Coast Voices with host Chris Kington Barker, and you're invited to be a part of today's discussion. To bring your comments or questions to today's guests, call them at 805-549-8855, or you can email them to voices@kcbx.org. Chris, I'm going to toss it back over to you.
Thank you, Rachel. And welcome back to our discussion about challenges for individuals on the autism spectrum and people who support them. My guests are Casey Roberts, Executive Director for Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, member of the SLO SELPA Community Advisory Committee, and parent of a child with autism; April Llewellyn, Board Chair, Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, and VP at PathPoint; and Rebecca Kosnick, parent and chair of the Community Advisory Committee with SELPA. And thank you for coming back. And we were talking before we had a call from a parent who really wanted to get some assistance about their 16-year-old son, that about masks. And Casey, you wanted to add some information.
I did. Thank you, Chris. So a lot of those with ASD have things that they are very interested in, that they fixate on. One of the suggestions that I've read through some of the blogs and research articles is letting the person be a part of picking the mask, whether it be a character, a pattern, whether it goes over the ears or it ties around the head. Make them a part of that. Make it something that they help choose. So that it's something that they are more likely to wear if there's something on it that they enjoy. Another thing is there are a lot of social stories that are out there right now that I have shared on Slow Autism's Facebook page about wearing a mask. For those that like videos, there are social story videos about wearing masks. There's a lot of ways to try and help. And like April said, when they see it, it becomes more repetitive. So the more that those with ASD see someone wearing a mask, the more they understand the need for it. Another thing that I did with my child was demonstrate why it was important. So if you do the science experiment where you show how far, you know, a sneeze or a cough can travel, and you demonstrate that to them, giving them something more tactile to understand is also very helpful if they're at that level where they could understand something like that.
That makes absolute sense. And there are masks that people can see one's mouth through, because there are transparent places over the mouth that sometimes can be helpful too. I mean, there's all kinds of creative stuff. You know, I have two grandchildren who are on the spectrum, and what I have found is that both of them really were engaged in sports, and that was something that was important for them, physically, but also for their parents, with organized sports not being an option anymore, what kind of impact is that having for other kids that are on the spectrum and their parents, frankly?
So organized sports is a huge outlet. Physical activity, whether it's in a group or it's individual, like karate or gymnastics or something along those lines, less of a team sport, are very, very important. Having a physical outlet, for especially for children that are sensory seekers, it's, you know, that impact of the gymnastics floor or jumping on that trampoline, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it may be, helps their little systems regulate. It gives them the feedback that they need. So a lot of parents have taken to, you know, they are doing more in-home therapy. You know, they use Go Noodle or they use other pre-resources that are on YouTube. You know, get up and dance. Get up and move. Sing. No matter what age you are, you love to sing and dance. It doesn't matter. We did a virtual summer camp this year through Slow Autism, and you know, we had a segment that, you know, you got up and you sang and you danced and you were a part, and just that movement and, you know, not being sedentary and having fun and being silly is really important.
When kids are immersed in regular classes, because I know a number of kids are, even though they have special plans, is there an integration in terms of an understanding of their needs to get up and move, to take the smaller breaks, that they're not going to be able to sit for the prolonged periods of time? And how do parents adjust to that and make that happen?
So there are those, you know, those are usually built into an IEP, like Rebecca was talking about, an individualized education plan. There are so many different adaptive tools that in-person schools use, you know, different kind of seating. Some students sit on what resembles a yoga ball because while they're sitting in class, they need that movement. They need that joint tactile feedback of their feet bouncing on the ground. So I know some parents have, you know, in that dedicated space where school occurs, they've gotten the yoga ball. They have purchased the adaptive pencils or pens, or, you know, some children need to have oral stimulation in order to help maintain their focus. So they have put things on the end of the pens and pencils that they can chew on while they're trying to do their work. Learning what works for your child and then seeking it out is the best way to do it. A lot of times the schools have already figured that out, so they can tell you. Some schools, some teachers are offering you these tools. They're saying, hey, we're not using it. This is what your child was using. Take it. Use it, which is great. Other than that, there are a lot of resources available through different websites. And even some local vendors have, you know, some of those chairs or those assistive devices. And if you do have a behaviorist or an occupational therapist, even if they're not doing in-home services, I would reach out and ask their opinion and ask where they find it and get those tools, because those can be a game changer. If, you know, you can recreate as much of the in-person school environment as possible and give them those additional tools and adaptations, it can be very helpful.
If parents don't have those resources, is there a way that they can get in touch with the schools? Because with the distance, are the teachers available to take their calls? And is there some kind of a sharing library, or is that something that in this county people could call your center for some assistance in getting connected to?
You know, absolutely. They can always reach out. And if I don't know the resource, I have an arsenal of a team built that surrounds me that I can always reach out to. Parents Helping Parents has a resource and lending library that is amazing. You know, they can be reached.
Yeah.
And if the teachers are available, you can reach the teachers via phone, email. A lot of them are email because they're distance learning right now. So they're doing a lot via email, even if they weren't previously. I've seen teachers that fought email for years and years and years, and now they are Google Classroom professionals at this point. if you don't have those tools or those resources, I would start with your school district and ask them, hey, can you help me figure out, you know, how to get some of these tools to help my child? And if you read a roadblock, you know, please reach out. We're happy to help. And if we don't have the resources, we can help point you in the right direction.
Are there some resources available for parents who really need help with tutoring kids but don't have the financial ability to hire tutors? Are there volunteer resources for that? Is there a pool of parents that are willing to engage in that? Is there anything in the community that can help with that?
I do know some parents that have pulled together to try and get those resources. If they receive services through Tri-Counties and they have respite, that's always another way that they can go through it. As far as individual organizations, if they'd like to reach out, I'd be happy to point them in the direction of some specific resources. But if they do receive respite, that does sometimes help. And any other services, I know that some behavioral companies that are now back doing in-person services have tailored their model to allow them to support. They can't do the teaching, but they can be supportive during distance learning.
Okay.
And there's a lot of retired teachers also that are out there on Facebook that are offering their services because they just feel for these parents and these kids and they just want to help.
Oh, okay. That's a good resource too. I'm going to ask all of you to think about how you would answer the question about what is this impact on the teachers, the educators, and the people that are providing these services with COVID too? How is it affecting your staff and the not only the parents, but the staff and the providers? And I'm going to take a real quick break here. I'm Chris Kington-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. Your listener-supported station. If you recently joined me, my guests are Casey Roberts, Executive Director for Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center and member of SLO CELPA, Community Advisory Committee, and April Llewellyn, Board Chair for Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center and VP of Pathpoint. Rebecca Kosnick is here, and she is a parent and chair of the Community Advisory Committee with CELPA. We're talking about the impact of COVID-19 has had on children and adults who are on the autism spectrum, and we invite your questions. We've got about 8 minutes, and you can call them in to 805-549-8855 if you want to get an answer from the professionals today, or send them into voices@kcbx.org. So it's got to have an impact on you, not being able to have access to people as freely, seeing them suffering and really not being able to do. And I'll start with you, April. What has been the impact with some of your staff, and how have you kind of dealt with that?
Well, we're going on 8 months, and it's we're getting a little COVID fatigue and Zoom fatigue. Those are the new catchphrases now.
Yeah.
We try to provide as much mental and emotional and physical support as we can for them, giving them time off, understanding that their core job was to work one-to-one with individuals. And now that we're doing everything remotely, they're having to learn a whole new skill set. They're having to be computer savvy, Zoom savvy, team savvy, you know, all sorts of stuff, Google games, all of the fancy stuff that they're doing with all of our individuals. And so on one side, it's exciting. It's something new and different for them. And on the other side, some staff may feel left behind because they just don't have the skill sets to do that. And so really trying to find those niches that staff can do and make sure that they're able to do that. So that's one thing. And just making sure that they have time off and are taking care of themselves. And chocolate always helps. So there's that. And then my sister's a teacher, and she, you know, I talk to her often, and she says she's working harder than she ever has.
Yeah.
She was doing remote, and now she's doing a combo or a hybrid. She's in the classroom with some of her kids and the rest of the kids are at home on video. So she's doing both, and it's just really, really tiring, but she's doing the best she can and knows that she has to continue, because those kids that are in the classroom, it's really helpful to the parents, and the ones that aren't, you know, unfortunately they are probably falling behind, but you can only do what you can do. So, and we've lost some staff, because they've had to stay home with their kids. They have little, little ones in Head Start, and they can't log onto the computer at three. So you have to be home with them. And so we're saying, take care of your family. We'll be here when you come back. We'll just put you on hold for a bit. So that's what we're trying to do. Just trying to be compassionate and patient and, you know, just it's tough right now for everybody.
Yeah. Thank you. And Casey, I'm going to go to you.
So it's been extremely tough to not be able to, you know, help people more. I have this one person that it was a faithful every game night, every teen dance, he was there, and I hear from him about once a week, is it back yet? Are we going back yet? And every week I have to tell him, no, I'm really sorry, not yet. But, you know, it breaks my heart. We had such plans for this year, and it just breaks my heart. And then talking with teachers and providers, they're so frustrated. They want to be in school. They want to help these kids. That's why they got into this profession. They certainly didn't get into it for the money. And they're not being able to do what they love. You know, these teachers who've been teaching for over 10 years are just, they just want their students back. They want to be able to see them and teach them and help them grow. And the level of frustration for them while trying to figure out their own personal lives and adapt to a routine that they've built over many years. They have perfected how they teach. They have perfected how they deal with students. It's just ever-changing. You know, I was talking to a special educator not that long ago, and we were talking about IEPs and how they were having to adjust goals, and she was just at a loss. She goes, I don't even know how to write some of these new goals. How do you write a goal that you can track properly via Zoom? And, you know, I'm supposed to be one-on-one with them, but what if it's at the same time as their, you know, general ed Zoom? I have to rearrange that schedule. And, you know, there are a lot of OTs and, you know, speech therapists that have decided to stay home with their families to make sure they're taken care of. So that resource isn't there. So providers and teachers they're at their wit's end. I was in a parent-teacher conference yesterday with, you know, three different teachers, and they were just all practically in tears because it has been so difficult for them.
Are you hearing from a lot of the teachers and the parents that the kids are slipping back in terms of their progress? Yeah.
Yes, I am. So typically, just like Rebecca mentioned earlier, you know, even if it's a slow but steady progression, you know, they're still progressing. They're not going backwards. They are seeing students go backwards. Students that don't even have an IEP or any kind of special education plan.
Say what an IEP is.
An IEP is an individualized education plan, and that's done with a team of educators and your special education director. So students that are typically developing and don't have any of those additional needs are slipping. They're going back. My son personally went backwards a year in his. He was at a 3.7 level, and now he's at a 2.7 grade level. And they're happy that it's not more. How sad is that? They're happy that it's not more because of how much school they missed. And that's terrifying to me, absolutely terrifying to me.
Yeah, I had a parent tell me yesterday that her daughter has essentially lost a year in her school, that she's not able to do what she was able to do 8 months ago at all. So, yeah.
But along with that frustration that teachers and parents and kids and individuals feel, we are starting to do fun events. And Casey, do you want to talk about our Halloween drive-through?
Oh, yes, I'd love to. We've decided to do something fun this year. So we are having a Halloween trick-or-treat drive-through next Friday. So we are, every year, typically at the end of April, beginning of May, the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center hosts its annual Walk and Resource Fair. It is our largest fundraiser of the year, and it's a symbolic stroll through Mission Plaza, and you have teams, and you take pictures, and we have vendors. But most importantly, for a lot of our families, is the resource fair part. We have service providers. We have, you know, outside vendors that offer off-the-wall therapies that, you know, may not be covered by Tri-Counties, but are something fun that help your child. So parents leave with a plethora of information and, you know, more to add to their arsenal for future use. So what we're trying to do is recreate that resource piece as much as humanly possible. So Passpoint and the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center have partnered together. We are going to be offering trick-or-treat buckets that have crafts to go, candy, and just some little gizmos. And then we are also creating a resource bag for parents and caregivers. We've reached out to all of our typical vendors and resource providers that attend the walk or participate, and many of them are contributing, you know, a pamphlet, any kind of promotional item to be like, hey, we're here, this is what we do, this is how we can help, to just kind of try and add something back into what everybody's lost. So we are doing that next Friday, October 30th, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Everybody has to stay in their vehicle. They will drive through. It will be safe and socially distanced. Everybody there will be in proper PPE, and you'll get your trick-or-treat bag and your resource bag.
And where do they drive to?
So Passpoint in San Luis Obispo is at 11491 Los Osos Valley Road.
Okay, great.
And it's just through the parking lot. And so we encourage everyone to wear costumes. Even though you're in your car, we'll be in costume just to kind of have some fun and have music going and lighten it up.
Sounds fantastic. And I want to thank my guests today, Casey Roberts, Executive Director, Central Coast Autism Center, Spectrum Center, April Llewellyn, Board Chair, Central Coast Autism Center, and VP of Passpoint, and Rebecca Kosnick, who's a parent and chair of the Community Advisory Committee. Next week, please join Fred Monroe and his guest, and stay tuned for Latino USA at 2 p.m. to follow this show. Central Coast Voices, sponsored by Action for Healthy Community and San Luis Obispo Community Foundation, and underwritten by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us today.